Have you shoveled the driveway yet or what?
I've looked outside. I was hoping you guys would declare it a snow day. Is it a snow day?
They don't do those anymore, don't you feel? I feel like there was a real, like, 50-50 shot when it snowed, you'd get a snow day when you were younger, and now it's like there's a 10% chance you're missing anything.
I love snow days.
Do you shovel, or do you check the weather like I used to and see if it was going to warm up and the snow would just melt?
Yeah, I usually, that's more like it. Yeah, kind of think, okay, is this, it's like whether you rake the leaves or wait for the wind to come up, right? Yeah, exactly the same strategy.
Okay, last of this tough journalistic thread we're on here, Stephen. Are you snowblower guy or are you grunt guy who actually, you know, does it the old school way?
No, a snowblower in the city kind of feels if I was out in my other home down east where they, you know, you can't see the house from the road, that's where you have a snowblower. You know, it's like sort of like, you know, driving around in a snowmobile up and down the street here if you had a snowblower in the city, right? It doesn't make sense.
All right. Okay, there you go. You're old school.
Yes.
We have managed, with great effort, to avoid this conversation for the first hour of the program, but we lead it with you here. The last time we were on the air Friday morning, Bill Peters had not formally been fired by the Calgary Flames. Where I want to begin with this is some of the subsequent statements, Stephen, that have come out. A former Carolina Hurricanes owner, and he was the owner at the time of the physical incidents on the bench, Peter Carmano says, look, had I known Bill Peters was being physical with players on the bench, I would have fired him on the spot. Ron Francis, who is now running the soon-to-be Seattle franchise, was the general manager of the Hurricanes at the time. He released a statement saying that he did, in fact, inform Carmanos, the owner, of these incidents. Somebody is lying. I'm not going to ask your opinion on who you think that is because you know as little or as much as we do on this matter, but this is just shady business.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, we're watching a kind of a culture shift before our eyes, I think, and that always is a messy business, right? Things have been done. And again, it's probably wrong to just limit this to hockey, but there is a specific hockey thing happening here because hockey is tied to, you know, into our culture and our identity, and there's a bunch of stuff that goes with that about, you know what it means to be part of a team, about toughness, about being able to kind of suck it up and take it because that's part of the, you know, kind of the ethos of the sport. There's a whole bunch of stuff tied into this, and the idea that if you tell the secrets of the dressing room that you're a snitch, you know, that you betrayed your teammates, you know, which, you know, I kind of think in a lot of these cases it's the opposite, but that is going to be messy. You know, it's not like everybody's going to come clean all at once and say, man, I was wrong. You know, everything I knew about this from the time I was a little kid was wrong. But, you know, that's so obviously somebody's not telling the truth here. And we're going to have, you know, accusations are going to fly and names are going to be named and people are going to deny it and people are going to step up and support friends. They're going to support teammates. They're going to support old coaches, even if they're accused of terrible things. Batten down the hatches. That's what we are in for right now. And I guess the one thing I would argue is that I think this is a good thing. You know, I think it's a good, healthy thing to be happening. However it came out and whatever the circumstances, I think it's a good conversation to have, even though especially in this country, it's going to be a really uncomfortable conversation because we make a bunch of assumptions about hockey and who we are.
If it comes out that Ron Francis knew about this and didn't go to ownership with it or to the right people, and then we find out that he actually did re-sign Peters, do you believe Seattle's going to do anything about it?
It's a really good question because it sounds like kind of a cheesy answer, but it's up to them, right? It's not like he committed a crime. It's about what you're willing to tolerate in an employee, you know, and that's what a lot of this is about. It's about, you know, what are my standards as an employer? Is that something I'm willing to tolerate? Is that something I'm willing to accept? So I don't know, you know, some of the people involved in that ownership group and management group out there. There's some smart folks and some you know, progressive thinkers, I would guess. And I think it might be difficult in a marketplace like that to suddenly immediately be under the microscope for things that, you know, if you didn't hire him, you wouldn't have to deal with at all, because it's about somebody else's past, not yours. But I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. And again, there is a, you know, we've already got kind of a he said situation between him and Karmanos. So, you know, and a lot of people sticking up for Ron Francis, who think he's a great hockey person and a great person, and he may be both of those things. You know, I don't know Ron Francis, so I'm not going to speak personally. But this, look, as I said, this is going to be, not going to be a lot of black and white here in the next little while. And I think a lot of people are going to have to make up their minds for themselves, including, you know, including the people who are issuing paychecks to some folks.
The only trouble with all of this, Stephen, and I agree with you, it's kind of a day of reckoning for the NHL. It probably needed to happen sooner rather than later. The fact that players feel comfortable to speak out, I think, is an amazing thing that they're empowered. But at the end of the day, there's still kind of a totalitarianism thing that goes on within each NHL franchise, where it's like, at the end of the day, this guy's your boss. He can determine your success or lack thereof in this particular field. And unlike the rest of us, where it's broadcasting, I'm going to go to another network, it's marketing, I'm going to go to another agency, there are only so many hockey roles. And so it's hard to sell people on being guided by their moral compass when really what we're guided by primarily is our bank accounts.
Yeah. No, look, it's we've got power imbalances here, but that's not just a hockey thing.
Yeah.
You know, think about professional sport on any, you know, in any sport where, you know, coaches wield the kind of power that they do in hockey, that could be amateur sport, you know, in cases. And we've seen lots of abuse within the amateur sports world. Mm-hmm. You know, think about a minor league baseball player, you know, and the sway a minor league manager might have over his career about how he is perceived within an organization. You know, the whole stuff with Hakeem Aliyu, you know, like there's reasons why he wasn't going to pipe up at the time. He, you know, was having a very hard time establishing himself in the professional game. He bounced around to a bunch of different places. And, you know, a coach in the minor leagues holds an enormous amount of power. So, yeah, anytime you have power imbalances, it's very hard to speak up because you can get punished for it. You could hurt your career. You know, it's why some of the, you know, if you think of kind of some of the heroic figures in sport socially, you know, politically, if you want to say that, were people who were willing to take that risk.
Right.
You know, were willing to risk, you know, different circumstances, but somebody like Kurt Flood, you know, or, you know, in the greatest example ever, Muhammad Ali, you know, people who said, well, yeah, I have a career at stake here, but I want to do what's right. It's a hard thing to do, you know, and again, you look in the mirror, you know, would you do it? You know, I think I don't expect that of people because I think it's a huge ask.
Yeah.
But, you know, like if my whole career was sitting in the balance or my paycheck was sitting in the balance, would I be the one to stand up and say, you know, I'm going to speak truth to power? I'm not sure I'd have the guts to do that.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing, Stephen, right? It's all this is great stuff and I'm happy players are coming out, but these are guys that did play or stuff that did happen 10 years ago.
Yep.
Are players that are currently playing going to speak up if something like this happens?
Not unless they feel that the wind direction has changed so dramatically that they will be heard and they will be supported by their organization. You know, and that's, we're not, you know, I don't know, are we there yet? Probably not. But yeah, the guys you're hearing from are out of the game. You're right. You know, they're done, and there's nothing that can be done to them now. And again, I think you're going to hear a lot of that, and some of it's going to be trivial, you know, relatively trivial, and some of it's going to be pretty grotesque. But I, you know, for people within the game to, you know, currently to believe that they can stand up and say no and be supported, you know, like again, think of this, like again, the Mitch Marner thing is a kind of a different kind of incident with Babcock, but, you know, Mitch Marner's a guy who was drafted in the, you know, very, very high in the draft, is a star, is going to make a ton of money. And, you know, I guess his family knew about what happened, and obviously his teammates knew about what happened and that weird little humiliation incident. But, you know, it's not like he's going to broadcast that to the world. You know, and he's a guy with a lot of, you know, again, in relative terms, with a lot of power within the system. So, I think we're a ways from that. But that's the direction this is moving, though, isn't it? You know, that the players are... going to feel emboldened and feel that their voice is going to be heard and feel that they won't be punished, or they, you know, that they won't be punished for speaking up. Now, that I still think it's a different equation for a guy playing in the National Hockey League, an established player, and somebody who's, you know, clinging to life in the somewhere between the AHL and the ECHL. I think, you know, that's a very different discussion.
With Steven Brund. Steven, do you think we should just take at face value the Players Association's request of its current constituents to come to it with any of these issues? Because I got to admit, I'm a cynic. And my first reaction was, this is an attempt to keep it in-house.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I'm not sure what's in it for them to keep it in-house. You know, they don't work for the league and they don't work for the coaches. And I'm not sure, you know, their job is to be an advocate for the players, you know, which is why people sometimes get mad at the Players Association, because they have a singular interest. You know, they're not neutral. So I'm not sure. It does kind of feel like that, Scotty, but I'm just kind of racking my brain to figure out why they would want to do that. Like, you know, like it's not like they're in cahoots with the NHL on this one. I don't think that would make any sense.
Well, and even if they were, it's not as though all of a sudden you go to the NHLPA and you can't go on Twitter after.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's even worse. Like, I went to the NHLPA with my concerns. They brushed it under the rug. So now I'm speaking out. That makes it 10 times worse. So I agree.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you're right, Ash. And you know, look, the social media, the genie's out of the bottle here, you know. and again, a lot of the people we're talking about are out of the game, you know, or some of them recently out of the game. Yeah, I think they're not. No one's going to march in lockstep on this one. It's a free for all now, and then, you know, there's going to be some abuses because it's a free for all. It's, you know, how these things go, right? That, you know, when everybody starts pointing fingers, some fingers will be pointed unfairly. That's just human nature.
With Steven Brund. So the Montreal Canadiens are on an 8-game winless streak. It feels like the doo-doo with the weather patterns blew east from Toronto to Montreal. I mean, they're struggling really badly right now. And I think we get a lot of this from social media, so we have to be careful. But there's been an up-and-down relationship between the fan base and the GM, Marc Bergevin, for a long time. Claude Julien is less than two calendar years into his second tenure as Habs head coach. There are calls for his head. Are we too quick nowadays, Steven, to just say, fire the coach? Or is that a reasonable take to have here, given the way the last 2.5-3 weeks have played out for Montreal?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I love Claude Julien, so I'm a big, you know, I like him very much personally, and I'm you know, so I tend to come down on Claude's side in these things. And I've watched a bunch of the games during this losing streak, and you know, I feel for him. It's, you know, it's got to be I don't think it's the team's not trying. I don't think the team has quit on him. It's not, you know, it's a different situation with the Leafs, where you'll say, well, you know, look, how can this incredibly talented team be not winning games, not, you know, not looking like they're in games sometimes against inferior teams? Like, the Habs aren't that. You know, this is the fatal flaw with the Montreal Canadiens in this incarnation has been, for, you know, and this predates Claude, is that it's, you know, the premise is that Carey Price is the best goaltender in the world. And that's your starting point. And it's sort of like, I think someone else made this comparison. So I read it somewhere last week about the Sabres with Dominik Hasek. You know, that when he was the best goaltender in the world, that was the assumption. And then you built out from there. But if he stopped being the best goaltender in the world, you're screwed. And Carey Price isn't the best goaltender in the world anymore. He's just not. You know, like, they played a really competitive game last night. And you know, the shot, the Pasternak shot that beat him to tie the game was a hell of a shot. But, you know, the best goaltender in the world stops that. And, you know, they squeak out a 1-0 win in that game. And, you know, that's kind of what they're built to do, I'm afraid. So you've committed an enormous amount of money, an enormous amount of term to Carey Price, and you've maybe got a diminishing asset there. So that's not Claude Julien's fault. And you can understand why they went that way and why that was the starting point. But, you know, that's a decision made by the general manager and, by extension, a decision made by ownership. So, you know, like, I think Claude's playing the cards he's been dealt. And maybe the cards just aren't good enough.
Yeah, it's funny that you talk about it in that sense, building from the back out, because I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and the things that they've been going through lately, mainly predating Sheldon Keefe. But they're more talented than the Montreal Canadiens, mm-hmm. but they weren't necessarily playing like that. And every time Frederik Andersen wasn't in net, it was a gong show. So
yeah.
it becomes of the utmost importance. And I just think when the Toronto Maple Leafs fan look at the makeup of their team, you could easily be in the exact same situation as the Montreal Canadiens, despite your talent pool.
You're absolutely right. I remember talking about this as this season started, about, you know, with massive optimism, obviously. And so what's the one question about the Leafs? And it's Freddie Andersen. And that's not a criticism of Freddie Andersen. It's just talking about how vital he is. You know, the way they play, he has to be really good. You know, he has to be really, really good for them to succeed. And when he's really good, they play, you know, kind of conscience free, right? They can play, and all of that offensive talent can show. But you know, if he's not as good, if it's, you know, B plus Freddie Andersen, or if it's whoever the backup is, it's a different hockey team, isn't it? So, yeah, like it's a lot to put. And you know, there have been goaltenders who have carried teams to the Stanley Cup. Patrick Waugh did it. There have been goaltenders who've carried teams through entire seasons because they were, and you know, Hasek would be an example. But boy, it's a tough way to win. You know, it really is. It's a huge burden to put on one guy.
We bounced this hypothetical around last hour, Stephen, and it's a different situation than Fleury to Vegas, because Fleury had 1 year left on his Pittsburgh contract when Vegas took him on. Now they've extended him, obviously, mm-hmm. because he played so well, and he's as big a force in the community representing the Golden Knights as he is a player on the ice, and he's been hugely important there. If you're the Seattle, whatever they're going to be called, do you take Carey Price if the Habs leave him exposed in the expansion draft?
Boy, that's an interesting one. I hadn't even thought about that.
Because he would have, what, 5 years maybe left on his deal? I'd have to check. But, there's significant term there for a guy entering his mid-30s.
Yeah, but you're going to have cap flexibility for, you know, a good chunk of that, right? Just because of the way your roster is going to be built. You should have all kinds of cap flexibility. So, you know, I guess you got to decide what he is. You know, like, what is he? What is he now, and what's he going to be 3 years from now? What's he going to be 5 years from now? It's a tough call. He might, you know, like Carey Price doesn't give a lot away, as you guys know, right? It's not like he emotes after games, but it's an incredibly hard place to play hockey. You know, to be the guy, right? Like, there's not another guy on that team in terms of, you know, there's not another superstar on that team. Shea Weber's a great player, but there's not another superstar on that team. He's it. You know, he's been it almost since the day he arrived. And it is a meat grinder. Man, I don't know how anybody plays. You know, people say Toronto's a tough place to play, but, you know, Montreal is a tough place to play in two languages. It is way tougher, I think. And, you know, maybe change the scene for a guy like that. You know, he's also from the West Coast, right? It would be close to home.
Yep.
You know, I was Carey Price. It might be my, I think I dream about that on some nights when things are going badly.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I mean, it's the one position in the sport that's isolated, right? It's you alone in your crease. You're the final line of defense. And whether it's fair or not, I mean, he's the best goaltender they've had since Waugh. And you go back to Dryden, you go back to Patrick Waugh, all these guys won Stanley Cups. And I'm not saying it's Carey Price's fault that the Habs haven't won a Stanley Cup since he joined the fold. It certainly isn't his fault, but he hasn't won one. And
nope.
You know, it's just, it's to your point, it's a tough place to play.
Well, I think Patrick Waugh hit the wall there, right?
Like, he damn right.
He said, no, I can't do it anymore. And the other thing is, you know, and I know he would not calculate it this way. I don't think he would, but, you know, like, Vegas is obviously an outlier in terms of what happened as an expansion team. But, you know, a goalie on an expansion team, you know, you're always the best player on the ice. You know, even if you give up a bunch of goals, you're generally the hero, right? In bad circumstances for a bad team, it's the opposite kind of pressure. You know, in Montreal right now, it's like, you know, if he gives up a bad goal, you know, it's the walls come down. You know, if an expansion team loses 5-4 or wins 5-4, it's not the worst thing in the world. You know, there's just, it would be a different way to live. It'd probably feel like a vacation, to be honest. You know, it really would. I kind of wish it for him because I think he has, he has kind of battled on nobly in Montreal and you know, he just never really complained about, you know, what the amount of pressure that's on his shoulders every night.